And welcome to another edition of Shedding Light here on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Bird, and so happy to have him back. It's been way too long, but scheduling and other things took precedence. But Paul George from Peninsula Peace and Justice back on the air here. Paul, great to see you again.
You're debugging your mixing board here.
Tell me, man. Where
quite
did
literally.
Come from? It was on my back. I felt like Barack Obama when he killed that fly on the studio. Paul George, Peninsula Peace and Justice, the director, and the guy holding up so much out here on the peninsula, and trying to help make the world a better place. How's it going?
Not well. Things just keep getting worse. It's job security for me, but
I was just going to say, Paul, the worse they get, the better it is for your career, right?
Well, I just assume, this is one of those kinds of jobs where your goal is to make yourself not needed. But
right.
I've been at it at the Peace and Justice Center for 22 years now. And it's not getting much better out there.
You know, it's funny, though, I think about it, and the way we've been brought up in American society is that, oh, yeah, it's like a sports thing. You know, you have a start, you have a middle, and you have an end. And the more I investigate the whole activism side of life, progressive side of life, it's like it's never going to end.
No, it's always in the middle.
Yeah.
It's always a work in progress.
Yeah. In our lifetime and the next lifetime, and the next generation, this struggle will go on forever, won't it?
Right. But you can be encouraged by looking back and seeing how far we have come. There have been a lot of progressive changes. You know, this country 100 years ago, you wouldn't have liked as much as you do now for all our problems right now.
Right.
And all those progressive social changes, as I've said on this program many times, have always come from the grassroots, from the people making the demands of the powerful and of the elites. It doesn't work the other way around.
Yeah.
They don't offer us progressive change. It comes from demand from the people.
Yeah, and actually, a lot of times it's just been where the next generation comes up and the whole mindset is different. Like, the younger generation doesn't think about race the way the older generation does it?
Apparently not. And, that's progress. And
that is.
Some things are just, are going to be generational. And others are concerted, organized efforts that take a long time to see the payoff.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's enough to talk about on the sheet, Paul. I got a couple of questions, but why don't I let you just open it up? What's hot on your mind right now? What's on the front burner?
Well, one thing I wanted to mention today, we were talking just before we went on air that Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! This morning did her whole program from Haiti.
Yeah.
It was 6 months ago today when that terrible, devastating earthquake hit, and things are still not very good in Haiti. Of the 1.5 million people that were displaced, lost their homes, only 28,000, 6 months later, are in new homes.
Hmm.
The rest are still living in tents or shanties, wherever they can find. There are 1,200 camps set up, where the displaced are staying, but only about a fourth of them have any kind of management from aid groups. Three-fourths of these 1,200 camps, the people are just making do on their own as best they can. Now, there's tremendous solidarity among the Haitian people, but still, in such situations, to be on your own, and then the millions and billions of dollars that have been promised to Haiti, it's just not showing up. And it's a pretty grim situation. And to be fair, when the tsunami hit Indonesia several years ago, it took 2 years to get everybody rehoused and things like that. So mm-hmm. This was the worst natural disaster to hit an urban area, probably in all of history. So it is going to take some time to fully recover, and We need to keep Haiti in our thoughts, keep supporting grassroots efforts to rebuild Haiti the way the Haitians want it to be rebuilt, follow their lead, let them have the voice. It has to be a democratic rebuilding, not only of, you know, the buildings, but the institutions as well. So I know there's a local event coming up for Haiti. I think
yeah, there is.
Info. You might as well tell people about
that. A good
that.
Friend of the show, Peter Dreckmeyer, former mayor of Palo Alto, sends us updates all the time. And a young lady from Palo Alto, Kelly Kobza, a native Palo Altan who recently returned from Haiti for a brief, she's going to be giving a briefing on the current situation and how all of us can help out. She spent 3 months there on a self-led mission just to try to serve the greater good. And she'll be speaking at World-Centric, which is a little company, right just south of Stanford Avenue, just off El Camino at 2121 Staunton Court in Palo Alto, a week from this Wednesday, the July 21st. At 7 p.m. So she'll be at World-Centric at 2121 Staunton Court in Palo Alto. And you can probably go on Peter Dreckmeyer, Peter Dreckmeyer's website, or you could probably Google her name, Kelly Kobza, K-O-B-Z-A. And you might even have a link for this on your website.
This is no, I just saw this in my email, so I don't have it up on the calendar yet. I imagine Asim Das of World-Centric has it listed on his website, and that's worldcentric.org.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Go on their website then.
And I want to give a little plug to World-Centric. We used to do a film series in collaboration with them, and The guy who runs it, Asim Das, started this business basically in his home. What it is he's trying to replace all the styrofoam containers and things. They manufacture from waste products from sugar cane and other organic material, kind of paper cups and plates and things that will decompose. And he's really built it up into a very big business, has replaced millions and millions of pieces of styrofoam.
Wow.
And Asim and World-Centric collaborate with a lot of progressive groups around here. He's got nice space to hold a meeting there. We held one there a couple of months ago called Climate Wise Women. Three women from the developing world traveling around talking about the impact of climate change on their lives. So, World-Centric. So check out not only for the calendar listing, but get rid of all that styrofoam. Next time you're having a company picnic or something, get a hold of World-Centric and get some of their compostable paper plates and things.
And their website is a .org, huh?
worldcentric.org.
Very cool. Three things I'd like to say about Haiti. Amy Goodman reported today that the Red Cross received $1 billion in donations for Haiti.
Yeah.
And yet the people are still living in sheets and cardboard little mock-ups, you know, no real tents. And I think somebody needs to call out not just the Red Cross, but all the other NGOs. But any one NGO that got $1 billion in aid, cash money,
yeah,
and you're still seeing people out there, I think somebody needs to take a look at that because that's not right.
Yeah, the Red Cross has been looked at before under circumstances like this.
After Katrina.
As you recall, they tried a new fundraising method where you would text a number for the Red Cross, and it would automatically be a $10 donation that would show up on your phone bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so that $1 billion that they collected came in $10 at a time. That's a whole lot of caring among folks.
It sure is.
And that's very encouraging, but they tend to, you know, people's attention tends to drift away. And here we are 6 months later, and like I said, only 28,000 of the 1.5 million people displaced are back into homes now.
Mm-hmm.
And
Another problem in Haiti, too, was all the sweatshops. It became the main purveyor of people working so we could all have tennis shoes and cheap T-shirts and socks and underwear and stuff like that. And, you know, it was sweatshops that we've talked about this on the show before.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why the earthquake was so devastating back under the Duvalier dictatorship. The United States encouraged Haiti to switched to a manufacturing export economy. They set up all these sweatshops in Port-au-Prince. People started streaming toward the capital to supposedly get these jobs, and there just weren't enough jobs to go around. And then places like Cité Soleil, where there was so much devastation, was because, you know, there were no building codes. People were just building shanty towns because they had no money to really build houses. So it was overpopulated, underbuilt. And so when this devastating earthquake hit, the entire area just collapsed. One of the reports I was reading just this morning, in the town where the earthquake was directly under, there are still bodies under the rubble.
Wow.
Because they haven't cleared the rubble out yet. They have no machinery. They're clearing by hand, and that takes a long time. And so you got to wonder, you know, where are all these hundreds of millions of dollars that the Red Cross collected and, you know, all these other groups? That's why when we did a benefit for Haiti with the great blues player Kenny Neal back in February, the money we raised went straight to grassroots organizations in Haiti, because you know, not through any of these large NGOs, because, you know, they take an administrative chunk out and it takes time to get it down there.
Right.
You know,
well, we found out something else on Democracy Now too today. The U.S. military sent Haiti a bill for all the stuff they did when they landed and took over the airport. And you know, I'm not against the U.S. military, but it seems kind of strange that if the military is going to go in there and volunteer to make sure nobody riots, you know, when they weren't rioting anyway, and kind of bottleneck all the supplies at the airport, which is another thing that the U.S. military did.
Yeah, so they closed the airport for a while.
Yeah. And some planes just, I heard Doctors Without Borders just landed. They just went, well, forget it. We're just landing anyway.
Right.
And you had stuff like that going on. And then they sent Haiti a bill for that. Some of that money that was supposed to go for Haiti ended up going to the U.S. military. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, you just have to wonder, what were they thinking, you know?
Well,
they weren't.
Well, they is us, you know.
They is us if we're paying attention. And they do a lot of stuff out of the limelight like this.
And maybe we ought to start paying attention.
Yeah. Well, that's why we have programs like this.
That's right. Another one we heard on Democracy Now! Today was the great Bill Clinton, former president. You know, God bless him, but you know, he's now the UN representative for a representative to Haiti. And he's down there trying to get the sweatshops open back up. And, you know, let's get some more jobs for these people. When I think that was the problem, wouldn't it be better if those people were allowed to rebuild their own society the way they wanted to?
Well, that's the thing, is they're not being asked what they want or what their opinions are.
Yeah.
You know, before Bill Clinton became the special UN representative for Haiti earthquake relief, he was often in Haiti representing private corporations as a private citizen.
So, what a coincidence.
Yeah. So he's kind of, you know, had his fingers in the corporate pie in Haiti for quite a while.
Right. And do we know anything about the oil in the Gulf? We haven't heard it reached Haiti or Cuba or Jamaica yet, but it's probably just a matter of time till it does, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything recently. They were worried that it was going to, you know, slip around the southern end of Florida and get out in the Gulf Stream that could carry it all over the Atlantic.
Might end up in Britain.
Yeah.
where it probably needs to.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, they're putting a new cap on today, and I'm, you know, everybody's sitting around with their fingers crossed.
Right, exactly.
This thing will finally stop this.
Well, let's do this. Let's shift gears. Let's play a little Rosemont Jolissant, who you had on your your big Haiti fundraiser along with Kenny Neal. He was on Democracy Now! Today, too. You brought his CD with you. Let's listen to a little bit of Rosemont, and who apparently might be living in Palo Alto.
He is.
And we got to get him back on the air here, man.
Yeah,
we work that out.
Yeah, you need to.
Let's play a little Rosemont, and we'll come back and get into some of these other pressing current issues that people need to know about. Man's name is Rosemont Jolisant, and he had won the equivalent to the American Idol in Haiti the year before the earthquake. And when the earthquake hit, he got on board with a NGO called Our Soil, isn't that?
Soil, yeah.
Soil, S-O-I-L.
Right.
Created actually right here, partly by a Stanford grad.
That's right, Sasha Kramer. Studied microbiology or something,
and she's down
came up with this way to make a really good fertilizer
naturally
out of human waste. And so she's got these special latrines, and it helps keep the environment clean and makes plenty of good fertilizer for agriculture there.
And Rosemont has been fundraising for them around the states.
Yeah.
And then he, as you told me, he got settled here in Palo Alto, and he wants to go to school here.
Right.
We haven't heard from him in a while. We did have him on the show one day, but we're going to try to get him back.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, definitely. Here with Paul George, Director of Peninsula Peace and Justice. He's shifting gears now.
Well, before we leave Haiti, let me just mention, we talk about the need is still great there, and
sure.
Money to go to NGOs or to Haitian grassroots groups, check out HaitiAction.net.
Okay.
And you can learn a lot of good stuff, and they have their own emergency relief fund.
And that's on the ground grassroots
stuff. That's on the ground grassroots stuff in Haiti, HaitiAction.net.
Great. Now, are we going to take a look at Congress and the Senate?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, Congress has just had their two-week-long July 4th break, and they're coming back, which should send us all fleeing to the hills.
Yeah, I'm real excited.
But
I'm so glad they got a break, you know, because they're so overworked.
Well, they were overworking their creativity just before they broke. The House of Representatives had a vote on paying for the Afghanistan escalation, $33 billion.
Gee, where'd they find that money? I thought we were broke.
Yeah, well, you can't spend it on unemployment insurance, that's for sure.
Yeah, or health care.
That's right.
We can't afford that.
So what they came up with, because they know that this the Afghanistan war is becoming a real liability. There's a lot of Democrats who want to see us getting out of there. They combined the money for the war, $33 billion, with billions more for emergency relief for various parts of the country and for education to help pay for teachers. Teachers unions were strongly behind this bill, without mentioning that it was also paying for the escalation of the war.
Is that legal?
Well, where do you hear the rest of this story, what
they
did? This
is amazing.
So they bring it to the House, and people are still not wanting to vote for the war funding.
Mm-hmm.
So in a procedural move, what they usually do before they actually vote on a bill, they vote on what's called the roll. And that simply decides how they're going to vote on the actual bill, whatever they're voting on, and whether it's procedural, whether amendments will be allowed to be offered, how long the debate will be. They set the rules for the coming vote.
Mm-hmm.
So on this Afghanistan war funding one, they first voted on the roll. And this is a parliamentary procedure. They called it a self-executing rule. And so they were being asked just to vote on the rule. The self-executing rule said that if any amendment proposed to the bill is passed, then the entire bill is deemed passed.
Oh.
So all these Democrats could vote yes on the rule and be able to tell their constituents, I didn't vote for war funding.
Right.
So they voted on the rule. That passed. Very close vote. But it passed. And then they went through different amendments. And one was for some education funding.
School funding, right.
And disaster relief. And those passed. And so as soon as those passed under the self-executing rule, the $33 billion to escalate the war in Afghanistan was deemed passed without anyone ever directly voting on it. Now, there were a couple other amendments that were offered. Barbara Lee offered an amendment to restrict any money for Afghanistan to be used for withdrawal purposes only. That one went down in a major defeat. They didn't even take a roll call vote on that one.
Hmm.
It was defeated by acclamation, so they don't even have a record of who voted for or against that. And then Representative Jim McGovern also offered an amendment that would set a timeline that would require the White House to report a timeline to Congress on getting out of Afghanistan. In other words, a plan for withdrawal. That one also went down to defeat, but it got a lot of votes among the Democrats. The Republicans, of course, were voting against that. And then the Republicans, trying to trap the Democrats, offered an amendment to just cut off funding for the war. And that garnered 25 votes total out of the 435 in the House. So In other words, what they ended up doing to pass $33 billion in war funding was to vote five times without ever once directly voting on the war funding. And it has passed. Now, it's coming up again because the bill that the House passed was substantially different than what the Senate had previously passed.
Mm-hmm.
So now it goes back to the Senate, and they'll take a look at the House bill, and it may have to go back to conference to get the two bills put together, but there will be another vote in the Senate. It's assumed that the Senate will not pass the same bill that the House passed. That the Republicans in the Senate will try to cut some of the domestic spending out of there, which means that we'll be coming back to the House as well. So, you know, this is the time this week and next week to be contacting your senators and your representatives to let them know that the $33 billion headed for Afghanistan should be directed at bringing the troops home. And so get on the phone and call your reps and your senators and let them know how you feel about another $33 billion for this war, which is getting worse all the time. This first 6 months of 2010 have been the deadliest since the original invasion back in 2001. So here we are 9 years later, almost 9 years later, and the violence is at the highest level it's been at.
Question to you, Paul. You're a lifelong activist. You've been looking at this thing. Why are we still there? What do you think? Is it the money? Is it that the military is just on this mad adventure and they keep getting told, yeah, we'll give you some more money for it? They're not, forget bin Laden, that's out the window. They might claim that they're looking for him, but what do you think? Why are we still there?
Strategic location.
China, Russia, all that stuff.
Iran, still Iraq. Gas pipelines out of the Caucasus Mountains in the Caspian Sea.
Are they built or are they building them?
Well, there are various proposals.
So they haven't put them in yet. So it might be a while.
Yeah. It's not the kind of place where you're going to be building a natural gas pipeline anytime soon.
Right.
There were U.S. Oil and energy companies negotiating with the Taliban long before 2001.
Michael Moore reported that in Fahrenheit 9/11,
yeah.
That Bush had brought them to Houston before 9/11, and then it was so strange that 6 months later, all of a sudden, they're the big boogeyman of the world.
Yeah.
When they were his buddies, they didn't take his deal. They didn't want his deal.
And of
they
course,
said no to him.
Of course, their current president, Karzai, was an advisor to one of the big oil companies.
Was he on the Chevron board?
I think it's Chevron. I'm not exactly, I wouldn't want to bet on that, but he was on one of the...
Yeah, he worked for an oil company.
And a major advisor.
So when the average American looks at that and asks, you know, why are we there? And then some pundit might say, look, you don't get the bigger picture. You know, there's bigger things here than just a military adventure. Is this really what America is? This good for America, though, for us to be there like that? Even
no.
For that stuff?
No, it's the absurdity of the Senate Republicans rejecting an extension in unemployment benefits in the midst of the worst economic downturn that we've had since the Great Depression, because they're worried about the budget deficit in Washington.
That they can't pay for it. But they just found $33 billion for the war.
But the $33 billion for the Afghanistan war is they're not looking to pay for that out of the budget. That's going right onto the deficit.
And where'd they get that money anyway? Because we are broke, right?
It goes on the national credit card.
So they're borrowing that from somebody like maybe China?
Yeah, the questions, you know, about budgeting the balancing the budget, you know, never seem to come up when it's for the military. And, you know, for that matter, I mean, just look at the Pentagon budget these days, $700 billion a year.
For what?
And then, so $700 billion, we can find that for the Pentagon, but we can't find a few billion to help out people who have been out of a job for over a year.
Well, they found $840 billion for the banks. That was even more, right?
Well, the banks will tell you they've paid it all back, and we've made a little profit on that.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. We're all stockholders in Goldman Sachs.
We didn't see any of the profit. We didn't get health care out of it.
Well,
we didn't get...
this is the way they work. They socialize the risks, i.e. the bailout, and privatize the profits.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it works.
And speaking of that, it leads me to remember this whole foreclosure thing. More people are being foreclosed on now. It's kind of cascaded, and that's this hidden thing that the media won't even talk about anymore. Barely. You see it come up every once in a while. But foreclosures are still slamming people left and right. Things that have been coming down the pike for a couple of years now, and the government never stepped up to protect those homeowners, put a billion or two or three or four billion up. Now, we interviewed some of the folks from NACA, the neighborhood coalition that's been saving people's mortgages. They got some serious money, and they'll come in and save your mortgage, and they go around and do seminars all around the country. They were here in the Bay Area back in October.
Huh.
And they'll save people who are going to get foreclosed on. They'll become your bank, and they'll save your mortgage if it's savable.
Yeah.
But outside that, we don't see the government stepping up at all to help save these thousands, hundreds of, really millions of homeowners that got caught up in this thing, and they're just getting put out on the street.
Yeah, the government program, such as it was entirely dependent on banks renegotiating people's mortgages and things like that, and it just has not happened. Curiously enough, sometime last week, brought in the New York Times from the driveway and opened it up, and there's my hometown of Los Altos on the front page of the New York Times. It made the front page because there's a lot of people walking away from multi-million dollar houses in Los Altos.
Underwater mortgages.
They're just mailing in the keys, you know.
Wow.
And so, it was a front page article about how bad this mortgage situation still is. And, so just to return to the theme, one of the things that really deepened the Great Recession, and everyone admits was a big mistake, was that after the initial stimulus, all the different programs that that Roosevelt started, the WPA and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Within a year or two, Congress started yelling about the budget deficits, and they got scared about the deficits. And so the government pulled in its spending, and the recession, the depression, returned with a full head of steam. Because as a lot of economists will tell you, budget deficits are okay during a period of economic crisis like this. The government is kind of the spender of last resort, and the stimulus money, including unemployment benefits, is important. And so, yes, you may have some long-range deficits, but right now you have a critical economic situation to deal with. Cutting off unemployment benefits is one of the stupidest things they can do, because that money gets spent right away.
That goes directly into the economy, right?
Yeah.
It's a shot in the arm.
That's right. And
they know that, too.
They know it.
But they get the media to report opposite.
Well, there are certain people that are trying to... The economy obviously is going to be the key issue in the November elections.
But which way are they going to spin it? See, one side's going to spin it one way, like the president, was what they're calling him. And then the other side's going to spin it their way and say, no, well, wait a minute, we're trying to work it all out. And really, from our point of view down here on the ground, they're all wrong.
Well,
aren't they?
Yeah, they often are. But, one of the main issues is going to be this idea of the deficit, and we have to balance the budget. That's what the Republicans are going to be yelling about. And, of course, they always want to be reducing the size of government anyway. So,
maybe they could take that $33 billion they want to send to Afghanistan, help balance the budget with that.
Well, that would be my opinion.
Yeah.
Let's... you know, bring those guys home.
Yeah. I think the average American probably feels that way, too. It's like, wait, you're sending $33 billion over there, but you say we're broke and we got to balance the budget?
Right.
What is all that about?
So, you know, this will be a major issue. And
so can people call their representatives and actually tell them, hey, look, dude, break it down. Come on.
Yeah, and tell them we want the stimulus. We don't care about the deficit right now. We care about the fact that hundreds of thousands of people don't have jobs.
And being thrown out on the street.
And they're not coming back. And if you do something as simple as cutting off people's unemployment benefits, it's going to create more joblessness because these people are, you know, they're not putting it in the bank. They're going to the grocery stores and, you know, fixing their cars and things like that. The very things that create jobs. So, you know, denying these unemployment benefits to try to balance the budget is just, you know, it's stupid fiscal policy. And in addition to, what are these millions of people going to do?
They don't care. It's cruel is what it is.
It is.
It's cruelty. And it shows the actual attitude of those people up on top, our elected representatives. Let's take a quick musical break. We're talking to Paul George, Peninsula Peace and Justice. We're going to find out some more issues he's been working on right after this. It is Paul George today, Peninsula Peace and Justice, and you can go on their website at peaceandjustice.org and see what's coming up. Paul does a monthly TV show on cable access here in Palo Alto, and I guess you had your latest one last week, right?
Yeah, and pretty interesting program on some things happening, especially in India, that we don't hear anything about. The fact that there is a very large armed insurgency, armed rebellion going on in India.
Really?
And the military's response to this rebellion is devastating the civilian population.
It always does, doesn't it?
It does. That's why something like 80% of casualties in modern warfare are civilians. But, you know, India is a huge country, major trading partner. We're helping support their nuclear power industry, which helps support their nuclear weapons program. And there's some pretty terrible human rights situation going on in India. And the two guys that came on the program to talk about this had also been traveling in China. And, you know, we've been hearing recently about Foxconn, this big factory in China that makes parts for just about all our cell phones, whether, you know, no matter what kind of cell phone you've got, your phone and parts for iPads and things like that.
The worker suicides, right?
Yeah, 12 suicides because of the terrible working conditions. One of our guests on this program, Robert Weil, former teacher down at UC Santa Cruz, was at that factory about a year ago and talked to a lot of the workers outside. So pretty interesting program, and it should be up online later today. All our TV programs and other speakers, the videos are all available on our website for free. They're right there on the homepage, the most recent ones. So, again, check out peaceandjustice.org.
Mm-hmm.
We currently have previous month's TV program with Jackie Cabasso. Jackie was talking about she was at the United Nations as a participant in the recent Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty Review Conference, a month-long conference that had the world talking about the future of nuclear weapons. And Jackie was there as a non-governmental organization representative. So she is participating in this conference and organizing demonstrations out in the street. So she had a real interesting take on this. She really knows her stuff. She's with Western States Legal Foundation. So that video's on our website right there. We've got talk by Amy Goodman is up on the homepage that she gave last fall.
Mm-hmm.
So check out some of our videos at peaceandjustice.org.
And you also sent a caravan off to Cuba.
Yeah.
Speak about that a little bit. That looked really interesting.
Yeah, well, this is the Pastors for Peace Cuba Caravan. They call it the Friendshipment. And they've been doing it for about 20 years now. It's to directly challenge the continuing U.S. embargo of Cuba. And what they do is they get donated vehicles. The one that came through Palo Alto was an old school bus that a guy up in British Columbia bought used and fixed up out on this little island called Salt Spring Island up off the British Columbia coast up there. And that bus came down the western route. There's actually, I think there were 12 different routes all over the country.
Hmm.
And they collect material aid, mostly construction materials they were focusing on this year because there's still a lot of reconstruction happening from hurricanes that Cuba suffered. They got hit by 3 major hurricanes about a year and a half ago, or maybe 2 years ago. So there's a lot of reconstruction. So as these caravans go, they stop in towns to collect material aid. The host group, of course, has been collecting the aid ahead of time and boxing it up and labeling it, and then it gets loaded on, and there's a presentation. And so that's what we had on Friday, and we held it at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Redwood City. They've got a great social action committee there, and the woman that headed up our material aid efforts, name of Carol, is a member of that church there. She has been on something like 18 of the 20 or so caravans that they've done. And she's been to Cuba herself 26 times, I found out Friday night.
Wow.
But what happens is then the caravan gets to the U.S.-Mexico border, and this is where the real challenge to the embargo happens, because they you can ship humanitarian aid to Cuba if you apply for a license. But Pastors for Peace has always refused to apply for a license because in doing so would recognize the embargo as being legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
So they refuse to apply for a permit. They get to the U.S. border, and some of the confrontations over the years have been pretty intense. There was one where they were really focusing on taking used computer equipment to Cuba, especially for their medical system. And they got to the border, and the U.S. Customs agents seized all the computers and took them off the buses and all the vehicles that were there for the caravan. And so the, what the people did was they sat on the buses and started a hunger strike. And they actually ended up getting a lot of support from Congress. I know our own local Congresswoman, Anna Eshoo, wrote a letter to Customs about letting the computers go, let the caravan go. Other years, the confrontations at the border haven't been as severe. We don't know what's going to happen this year. They'll be arriving there. I think they arrive at the border today, as a matter of fact. So we're all on an alert list if they get stopped. We get word out to our membership, you know, through our email alert system, and have people call Congress or the Treasury Department.
Do they all cross at the same place?
Yeah, they all cross. All cross.
Where is it that they cross?
You know, I don't.
California,
know.
Arizona, New Mexico,
Texas, I think, is where they cross. And then
not Juarez.
I don't think so.
Go there.
And then they take all the vehicles and load them on a ship in Mexico.
Oh, they send the vehicles down too.
Yeah, the bus that we hosted on Friday night is staying, and
it's going to Cuba.
Yeah, and it was really a neat story actually, because they know where this bus is headed. It's for a medical center. I'm trying to remember it, but there's like six different groups that are going to be sharing this bus because they need it at different times a day.
Mm-hmm.
So the bus is going to be taking fishermen early in the morning from town down to their boats.
Oh, wow.
And then taking kids to school. And then another group somewhere in the afternoon. And so, you know, it really spreads it around.
Now, when the Pastors of Peace set this up on the other end, on Cuba, do they have to go through the government to do that? Or are they working with Cuban NGOs?
They work with a coalition of churches in Cuba, so it's not going directly to the government.
And the government doesn't have a problem with that?
No.
I thought they were commie, you know, like a totalitarian. You know, they didn't let people do anything down there. They actually do?
Yes, they do.
Oh, that's not what the news media says here in the States.
Fidel, you know, back when he was still healthy and in charge, would often come and greet the caravan ships as they arrived. And people would have, you know, people on the caravan would have meetings with Fidel and other high-ranking Cuban government officials. So, you know, they're very supportive, but because of the problems up here, obviously the aid doesn't get delivered to the government. It's all non-governmental organizations down there the Cubans themselves select where the aid is going, how it's going to be used.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a double challenge. It's a symbolic and real direct challenge of the embargo itself, and you know the Americans on they go on these caravans are risking jail time when they come back.
They can be put in jail for going, can't they?
I think it's 30 years for visiting Cuba.
Man.
Yeah,
but they've never enforced it on these folks.
They have a couple of times seized people's passports when they come back. When you go to Cuba on this caravan, you can make your choice of whether you want a Cuban visa stamped in your passport.
Mm-hmm.
If you do, that's a conscious act of resistance. You're going to be coming back, you know, through the airports and checking in, and they're going to see you've been to Cuba. That's illegal. So a few years ago, they seized everybody who had a Cuban visa in their passport. They seized the passports. They're threatening them to prosecute them. Went on for they left this hanging over folks' heads for several months, and they finally didn't pursue it legally, but they were letting people know rather clearly that we don't want you doing this. And
I can't think of the last time Cuba attacked America. Why do we still hate those people?
You know, we started out the program talking about Haiti. Cuba sent hundreds of doctors immediately to Haiti right after the earthquake.
Well, they send them all over the world every year.
They
crank it, and there's American students down there now, too. They allow American students to come in and study.
They offer full scholarships for people to get their medical degrees to become full-blown doctors.
And they're great doctors, too.
And, you know, the program is aimed at the developing world, but U.S. students are welcome. We showed a little brief film about the Cuba caravan Friday night as part of the send-off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was showing a graduation from this medical college, and there were parents from all over the United States that were there in Cuba watching their kids graduate and become doctors.
And I wonder how they got in there and then how they got back out. And did they seize their passports too?
I don't know.
You got to wonder.
Like I said, you can travel to Cuba under certain conditions. You can take humanitarian aid if he asks for a license. You know, journalists and arts organizations can go, but you still have to get permission ahead of time from the Treasury Department. It's the Treasury Department enforces the embargo, so people can make it to Cuba legally, but you have to go through all kinds of hoops to get there. So I don't know the story on the parents that were there, but it's a neat program, and like I said, they offer a full scholarship. The students don't have to pay anything for this medical education, except they have to commit to 2 years of being doctors where there are no doctors now. And so they graduate from the medical school in Cuba and head off to the developing world and bring much-needed medical care. And that's their payment for medical school in
and
Cuba.
And that's the big, bad, evil country that we're supposed to be afraid of.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really hoping, I still think that we are seeing the closing years of this embargo on Cuba. It doesn't make any sense. It never did, but in the context of the Cold War, the anti-communist hysteria, you could at least understand how, you know, certain people in Washington could come up with this idea, how it could stay in place. But at this point, you have major agricultural corporations in this country fighting to get the embargo lifted. There's a lot of farmers in Nebraska that would love to be selling corn and beans and grains and wheat to Cuba. And, you know, you had Obama not too long ago talking about trying to increase U.S. exports as part of the response to the U.S. economic crisis. Well, you've got a willing market just 90 miles off our shore. So I think the embargo will probably come to an end before the end of Obama's first term. I'll make a bold prediction there and have me back in 3 years and we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll call you on it. Definitely.
Maybe it's just wishful thinking.
Paul George, the director of Peninsula Peace and Justice. As we wind down now, Paul, what do you got coming up? I know September is going to be a big one for you.
Yeah, you know, things slow down a lot in the summer, so
sure.
Except for our TV program in August, and with the possibility that, you know, we may have to have an emergency demonstration over something, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
Our next major events are not until September. First of all, on Saturday, September 11th.
Interesting date.
Yes. It's now officially Patriot Day. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's supposed to be a holiday, but this happens on a Saturday, so it's a holiday anyway.
So you're bringing a good patriot to town.
Yeah. I think Robert Scheer is a great patriot.
He is.
He's a longtime columnist for the Los Angeles Times, one of the original editors at Ramparts magazine.
Mm-hmm.
He's been around a long time.
Teaches still, too.
Still teaches at the Annenberg School for Communication down in the Los Angeles area. He's got a new book coming out called The Great American Stick-Up, Greedy Bankers doctors and the politicians who love them. And he's been talking a lot and writing a lot about the people who are Obama's top economic advisors, like Tim Geithner, Rubin, Volcker. These are a lot of the guys that brought us this trouble. And
Goldman Sachs gang.
Yeah. So that's what his book is about. And that's, again, Saturday, September 11th.
He'll be speaking in Palo Alto.
Yeah, it's going to be at the Unitarian Church on Charleston. So this is right there on our homepage, too, peaceandjustice.org.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be putting tickets on sale pretty soon. And then later in September, 2 weeks later, on Saturday, September 25th, the great journalist Robert Fisk will be back in town. And he doesn't have a new book out. He just, Bob Fisk comes around and does a lot of speaking tours in different parts of the country. And he does it to support grassroots organizations like Peninsula Peace and Justice Center. He doesn't charge us anything. We put him up in a hotel room and help pay for his plane ticket. And then all the proceeds we take become a benefit for us. So we're always grateful to him. And for any of your listeners who don't know, he's the foreign correspondent for the Independent newspaper based in London. He's been living in Beirut, Lebanon for about 30 years now and reporting on the Middle East. He's interviewed, speaking of September 11th, he's interviewed Osama bin Laden 3 times.
Hmm.
And he's won more awards for journalistic excellence than any other foreign correspondent working today. He's a fabulous guy. So that's Sunday, September 25th. And it's going to be at the First Presbyterian Church in Palo Alto. So check out peaceandjustice.org. Get all this. Take a look at the calendar that's online, because we list on there everybody's events in the area, and there's a lot of good stuff going on, like this Haiti event next week.
Yeah, and once again, too, if folks want to get in touch with that, go to worldcentric.org, and the talk will be by Kelly Kobza, who just got back from Haiti, and she'll be speaking there a week from Wednesday, the 21st of July, at 7 p.m. at World Centric. So go to worldcentric, CENTRIC.org, and it'll fill you in about all that. Go to Peninsula Peace and Justice to find out Paul's work. And Paul, I want to thank you once again for coming in.
My pleasure. Call Congress, stop the funding for the war.
Amen, brother. Keep up the good work, too, huh?
Thanks. I'll see you next month, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.